Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
All right. So we got two guests, I believe, on the line that we're going to talk to. And this came about to us, at least the information led to us, was from listeners who got in touch and said, hey, we were watching this Mystery Science Theater special that was going on. And they were doing this riff-along thing where it was a live social distancing version of Mystery Science Theater 3000. The live touring cast was watching some old episodes.
Right, and people were able to participate, correct?
Yeah, and they're doing their thing. They're throwing in the lines and so on. And I believe it was the Tom Servo character that said, we have this?
Yeah, I think it's all queued up to where it needs
okay.
to be.
Okay, so we heard this line, and somebody sent us an excerpt of it.
Isn't that the new Preston and Steve catchphrase? Danger, explosive door bolts.
And to say we were honored is an understatement.
Yes.
And I still don't know the origin of this and why we were mentioned.
And if we, and even if we find out that it was not even remotely an honor, we're still honored.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it still
exactly,
works. Yeah.
Because the show's awesome.
Has been for years.
And we found out more surprises in the connection to Philadelphia. We have a writer and producer who's from the area. We have the creator and original star who lives in Philadelphia.
Who the hell knew that?
I had no idea.
We could have been hitting him up for interviews all along.
For years. So please welcome creator Joel Hodgson to the show this morning. Hey, Joel. How you doing?
Hey, Preston, Steve. Thanks for having us on. I got Matt McGinnis, who's a writer producer.
Yes.
And hello. He and Matt wrote the line.
So did you, Matt?
Yeah,
I did. It's my fault.
Oh. Well, okay. Well, we have questions for everybody, but first let's go to you, Matt, with that line. First, your history. Do you still live in Philadelphia?
Oh yeah, we both do. Yeah, we're both in the area. I've lived here for 10 years. Matt's here, been here his whole life. So yeah.
Okay. All right. And then Matt, how long have you been with the show?
Oh gosh, it must be 4 years now, at least.
Okay, and so you've been writing for years, and then what made you decide to include us in the show?
Well, can I step in here? I want to just tell a little bit of the story because.
Yeah.
When we write the show, I mean, everybody writes, all the performers write, Matt and I write, and Cheryl, and Cheryl Volpe, who's one of our producers, writes. We all work on it, but then Matt and I are the ones who kind of pick the riffs and fill in any blanks that are there. So there was this spot, and I'm reading to him that line, and he goes, I don't know why, but I want to put a Preston, you know, I want to put a Preston and Steve joke in here. And I said, go for it, man. And so everybody loved it, and we were really thrilled to do it. But I think go ahead, Matt. I'll let you explain a little more, but I just want to preface it.
So it was basically, like, there's just this shot in the movie where you see this close-up of, like, this moon rover kind mm-hmm. of thing, this, like, they call it a bug in the movie that they're riding in, and it's got these big red stickers on it, and in all caps it all says, like, you know, danger, explosive door, and to me it just looked like a Gadzook sticker.
There you go.
yeah
oh.
What was the movie again, because I've seen it countless times, and you all have for years displayed a knack for picking out these movies where you've seen them, but you can never remember the title. Do you remember the title of the movie?
It's Moon 02, and
That's it.
Called the first Western in space.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it was the same year that 2001 came out, and it was the one that didn't succeed.
It's so odd because on a quality scale, they're so dead even.
Oh, well, they put a lot of money into this movie, so it may be one of the most expensive bad movies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's so cool, and what a surprise. And Matt, we appreciate that. That's awesome. And Joel, just, you know, creating this show, and obviously we're going to ask some questions you've been asked for years, but ones that we want to know the answer to, because what year was the first year that Mystery Science Theater 3000 was able to find a home?
Well, we started in Minneapolis on a UHF channel probably in 1989, and then we really started the first time we got paid to do it was for Comedy Central, and that was like right around 1990, I guess.
Yeah,
I think so. So It's been 30 years. We're just coming up on 31 years now.
Yeah, and the traction was almost instantaneous. I remember this was before there was a, quote unquote, a viral atmosphere to spread the word. Everyone was, you know, coming the same way you'd be bombarded with Monty Python freaks. You'd get the Mystery Science Theater stuff. And so everyone was loving it. You took essentially, so you're a comedian, Joel, and have been working, you know, in the comedy world for years. And it's what we all love to do, sit there and make fun of bad movies. But what I want to ask you, and I don't know if this is an apocryphal story or not, was the impetus for this movie? You were sort of inspired by a movie that I love called Silent Running?
Yeah, absolutely. When I first got to the idea of movie riffing, the idea of, you know, trying to have a second narrative over the top of a movie, you know, just like adding jokes and doing it for the whole length of a movie, I first started with this shot in, it was a Charlton Heston movie. It was the one where the Omega Man.
Omega Man. Yeah.
And the Omega Man, he's watching Woodstock, and he's going, "Look at all the people." And so it was kind of like that. I started with the idea that there's an apocalypse, and there's a guy in a TV station with a robot. And it was like a zombie outbreak, right? And I realized at the time I didn't think I could really make that funny. So I softened it to Silent Running, which is a guy in space with three robot companions. And so that's kind of how I got to
that. A lot of people don't remember. Okay. It's a great movie. It was done by the same guy who did the special effects for 2001. And
Trumbull
directed it. And there was Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And they were the three robots that kept him sort of sane.
Bruce Dern is unbelievable in it because he goes nuts. At the end, he loses it, and he's so good at that.
he starts nuts and gets nutsier. But yeah, when I heard that, I thought it was so awesome because I've loved that movie for years, and
it's great.
It made perfect sense.
Joel, did you create Crow and Tom Servo, your robot companions as well?
Yeah, I had made it was kind of peculiar, but I had made robots for a while before MST, and I used to sell them. In a shop in Minneapolis, I'd collage these robots out of found objects. I kind of figured out how to do it. And then I said, oh, I know how to do that. There's this unique style of making a puppet. So I'll make puppets like that. So I made the first, you know, Tom Servo Crow and what was called Gypsy. Now she's called GPC.
Okay.
So you were doing stuff like this. You started the way a lot of people that end up to entertain a livelihood with comedy. You started doing magic, ventriloquism, all the stuff that a lot of people who end up in entertainment are drawing. Carson started that way. And so were you incorporating ventriloquism and magic in your earliest performances?
Well, if you look at it, it's kind of inspired by ventriloquism because, you know, the ultimate when a ventriloquist is really good, he uses two dummies. And if you look at MST from the back, it's a guy. Like, I originally thought, oh, maybe I'll run both robots. So I'd be holding each of them like two ventriloquist dummies. But ultimately, I brought in two really, really brilliant guys, Trace Beaulieu and J. Elvis Weinstein, who were the original Tom Servo and the original Crow. And they really, like, brought those characters to life as we know them now. And, you know, I got to tell you guys, we got to get Tom and Crow on your show sometime.
Yes. We'd love that. Yes. We'd be honored.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Matt, were you obviously a writer, producer, and a comedian, and your own right comedy writer. Had to be a fan of the show well before you joined it, correct?
Oh yeah, like when I was growing up, I remember seeing the show on like Comedy Central when I was a kid, and it kind of disappeared from my consciousness until about like high school when I was reintroduced to it because I was, you know, I fell in love with like bad movies by like Ed Wood and Coleman Francis and stuff like that. So when I rediscovered this show that used those movies as basically the plot of each episode, I was like, this is genius. Like, this is fantastic. So yeah, when I started working with Joel, I was already a huge fan of the show. And I hope that helped.
You both have to subscribe to the notion that I do, that, you know, movies are like pizza. Even bad pizza is still pretty good. And these movies, and I found years ago being drawn to them. There was a book that was out. He was at the time a movie critic, Michael Medved, and I think it was the Gold Turkey Awards.
Oh yeah. That was a big influence on me. I saw that in college, and I remember saying to myself, why isn't anybody making shows with these
right.
movies? These movies are adorable. It was a huge influence on me, absolutely.
And you start,
I've got my copy somewhere.
There you go. I thought so, because things like Horror Party Beach and all of those all of those great ones, and This Island Earth, which, so let me ask you, both of you, your favorite movie to give the treatment to, what has provided you the most opportunity and joy to bring your special skills to?
Hmm. Wow, Matt, why don't you go first?
My favorite so far has been, there was one that we did in season 12 on Netflix. A movie called Mac and Me.
Oh, God, yes! We talk about it all the time.
It gets mentioned on the show all the time.
We had the director and we had the director and writer in here, and he was with James Brolin. Yeah. They were pushing another movie they had worked on, and the only Nick, you'll remember this. The only reason we had him in here was because we were such big fans of Mac and Me, which was the ultimate E.T. ripoff.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. And we got to hype our Netflix series. We got 20 feature-length episodes on Netflix. And not to toot our own horn, but all of them are 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes right now. So
awesome.
We want to encourage you to everybody listening to check them out. We're real proud of them.
Yeah, if you've never experienced Mystery Science Theater 3000, this is something that you could delve into and would be brand new, and you would have a blast with. Joel, I wanted to ask you about how you would categorize your level of celebrity, because you know we have all kinds of. Of people now via YouTube and the web and they have their little niche, but you guys, you were that before any of this came along. And I remember one time we had our friends, They Might Be Giants, in, and I remember John Flansburgh saying, we have successfully clawed our way to the middle. I'll never forget. He used the phrase like that.
I'd feel really honored if I was as famous as They Might Be Giants. I think I'd be really content to reside in the Parthenon of middle level celebrities. Absolutely.
I'd feel honored if you were that famous too. It's a great question, and I've been wondering about that myself. I gotta say, I'm really happy with it. I have friends that are really famous, and their lives can be really wild. And I'll give you an example. I wrote on Jerry Seinfeld's first HBO special, Stand Up Confidential, and he's been great to me. I'm in Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Right.
And he's a wonderful guy and a wonderful friend, but he's so famous that when we go out to eat, it's like people just get electrified, you know, and really get excited when he's around. And I would get self-conscious if I was that exciting anywhere I went. So I'm pretty happy with it. And, I like doing the work, and I'm really glad we got a show up that's running, and you know, we're still running after 30 years, so I'm really grateful for it.
I'll never forget the first time I got hooked, and I remember the specific line that did it for me. I couldn't tell you what movie it was, couldn't tell you what year it was, but the show was on. I don't even think I knew what Mystery Science Theater 3000 was, but there was a scene where a guy who was clearly, he was getting ready to leave his home forever. He was running from the law or something like that, or I don't know what. And he takes one last glance at his house or apartment inside before he leaves. And one of the characters just goes, "Man, I've had a lot of kick-ass parties here," and then left. And I'm like, that was hilarious. And I was on board. You probably have no idea what that was from, do you, Joel? So many lines.
I couldn't tell you. We've produced over 200,000 riffs.
Wow.
Over the last 30 years. So there's a lot of them. Some of them I remember, but some of them I don't. But it's so fun to hear you say that, because it's still funny, and I don't remember it. So it's really fun to hear it again.
Yeah.
Coming from you.
Well,
I'm really glad. I'm glad it worked for you, man.
Cool, cool.
What you guys do, it's something that we love, and a lot of times we'll do something on the show, and there'll be a throwaway where no one will react to, and then you'll get an email or a tweet from somebody who said, I heard that, and it cracked me up. And many times my favorite moments from Mystery Science Theater are those really side comments because I assume that what you're doing is you're kind of taking multiple passes at the movie to make it as densely humor filled as you do, because that's not one pass of watching, correct?
That's exactly right. We watch it and we do it as a group, and everybody goes through it, and we just kind of, it takes the stress off, because you just kind of it's like knitting in a way. So there's not, like, comedy shouldn't be hard, and it shouldn't be like, I think there's kind of a model, like probably from Neil Simon plays, that everyone in the writer's room is real mean, and you know, it's hard to do, and everybody's angry, and it doesn't work that way. You have to kind of like each other, and you only want to make people laugh you like. So it's just kind of like, we have a lot of fun writing it, and there's not a lot of stress, because we just kind of do it all together and create a bunch of ideas, and we don't create and edit at the same time. And that's the secret of what we do. We do not let anybody in the room who's saying, no, not funny enough, give me something else, they can't be in the writer's room, because
it's great.
That's not how you do it. It's not how you do it. You edit later. And so that's kind of the secret of the show. That's why it's lasted so long.
And Joel, as far as like the nuts and bolts and the filming and so forth, you know, while the movie's on and we're watching the crew make their commentary, we see the silhouettes of the backs of them. Do you guys have a script in front of you, or is it you just remember? I would imagine you've got to have some notes in front of you while you're doing the show.
Well, yeah, there's 700 riffs in a movie, so we have it all written out, and it's on a prompter, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's got a prompter that they're watching, so they can track it. What's interesting about the riff along, the thing that we did on Sunday, and we had like 200,000 views, that people who saw, which we're really happy with, because it was something we did really spur of the moment. And it was kind of like, we were really just wading into it. But if you saw those early episodes, we were kind of halfway between writing and kind of just saying stuff. We were all over the place in that first episode. That episode, Moon Zero 2, we kind of were missing stuff, and we were kind of throwing in our own stuff, and we were kind of talking over each other. So after the first season, we were then saying, okay, we write everything, because there's all these log jams that happen when you just yell out stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So we write it all. We write it all now. Yeah.
So, Matt, obviously, being a part of the show now and doing what you're doing, and Joel's had a long run and continues to, and obviously we have the revelation of being able to access episodes on Netflix. What's in your future? Are you going to carry this torch as long as you can as well, or what else do you have working?
Oh, man, that's such a... Well, depends
he's gotta,
on...
He's got to take again. It. He's got to take it from me. Wait, I want to let you finish that line, because it's really funny. Go ahead.
I reiterate, depends on when the future is. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's there. Again, you're talking about the level of celebrity and all that stuff. There are worse things, you know, than being part of something that is so beloved and can keep adapting, because the one thing you can be certain of is substandard movies are always going to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. It's our greatest natural resource. Bad movies.
Matt, so you're a lifer. Where'd you grow up around here?
I grew up in the Northeast, sort of the Frankfurt area.
Okay.
And, it's still very near and dear to my heart, but I've spent my whole life in the city, and I've just been all over. I've got friends all over the city that I used to go and visit. You know how it is nowadays.
Yes, exactly.
I usually get all over the city. I usually sometimes I used to spend a lot of time just down in the heart of the city with friends and seeing concerts and things and that kind of fun stuff. But yeah, you know, it's been a Philly boy my whole life.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Joel Hodgson and Matt McGinnis with Mystery Science Theater 3000. They had written us into their riff along that they had the other night. Joel, how about you? How did Philly come into your life?
Oh, you know, my wife's family's from out here, so I'm from the Midwest, but we've been here 10 years. I really love it, and it's kind of, it's been great, and I'm just, it's been wonderful working here, and we're just having a blast. It's been super cool.
Are you working for a tech firm? I think I got the story right.
I was working for a friend of mine. It was a company called Kinet that had a novel propulsion system for satellites.
Wow!
And
wow.
So all I was doing was I can't wade in and actually explain to you technically what they did, but it was a fantastic. It was a fantastic method of using propulsion on a satellite where they normally don't. They're putting up a lot of CubeSats right now, which really just they pack them in the ballast in rockets, and they let them go, and they basically have a decay. They just kind of slowly rotate around the Earth, and they decay into the atmosphere and burn up. But as they're going down, they can use them, and they're about the size of a lunchbox.
That's
and
wild.
So this company has this propulsion system for those that they're developing, and I was only helping them with promoting stuff, and I'm not at all involved technically. It's mostly like graphics, their website, and their PR stuff.
I got you,
but still, yeah. You bizarrely got tied to the space. Projects.
I know. That's... It was so weird.
It's so weird.
And
life imitating art.
And I'm way. Yes. I'm in way over my head. So I'm just going to shut up about it.
Yeah. No. You're like a 10 bell nerd because of that. Now, man, that's
yeah,
awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That is super cool. But it is like some self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. You know? Yeah, you eventually will end up in some sort of ship with Robo.
Oh,
Joel, how about the live shows? You know, when people are able to do live shows, do you participate in those?
We just finished the tour. It was amazing. Let me give you the beats. We closed the tour on Monday, flew home. On Tuesday, the truck was there. We unloaded the truck into the storage space. On Wednesday, they announced the pandemic. So
wow.
We got done with a 100-city tour the day before the pandemic was announced. So we're really grateful. And then once it happened, we just started working on this idea of the riff along. And it was really, we're really happy with it. It was successful. We'll probably do it again and other things like it, just because people appreciated it so much. And we just want to keep, you know, while we're waiting for this pandemic to get kind of managed, we still want to keep doing stuff. So this was kind of our producing a version of MST while everybody's at home.
Yeah, no, and obviously you have the wherewithal to do that with the technology the way it is. But when it does become something that is feasible and viable, and we can attend, you do anything locally. You let us know.
Yeah, we
would love to be a part.
We played the Miriam this fall. We sold out the Miriam, which was really a blast, and did a lot of shows locally. We played the Keswick several times.
How the hell are we missing this?
We always do Philly. It's always been such a wonderful town for us. So of course we always. Yeah. And a lot of those people are our friends anyway. We paper the room.
Hey, Joel, for the live shows, has anyone ever floated the concept of maybe taking some late 70s, early 80s porn movies that actually had plots to them and maybe edit out the hardcore sex and doing
yeah.
that?
There
would be like so much material from that.
It's waiting to happen.
Okay.
So much. I mean, but they're all about the pool boy, right?
I remember one.
You know?
Yeah, they would really try to have plots. And what you would do is, when when you remember, you used to have to rent porn movies from, mm-hmm. it wasn't just readily available every time you turn on the computer. And then you would see sort of the duress in the videotape. It would start to whir a little bit as an actual acted scene would start up,
mm-hmm.
because people were then speeding to the next sex scene. Mm-hmm. And it was but it was pretty wild. But they would really try to make, we're going to make something profound here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good material there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially Emmanuel in Space. If you want to go to like to that softcore stuff, I believe there was an Emmanuel in Space.
Okay.
Well, it seemed a likely progression, right? Yeah. That's where her life was leading her eventually.
Hey, Joel, this is Casey. I haven't really chimed in at all during this interview, but I wanted to ask about, people sort of gaining a taste over time for what you created so many years ago. Because, for instance, I couldn't have eaten sushi in high school. There's no way my palate would have allowed it. And so way back then, I just don't think my comedic chops allowed for me to understand what you were doing. It was the same thing with, Monty Python. It wasn't until I became an adult where I was like, oh, now I actually get this. And I wasn't sure if you ever hear from people who many, many years later finally understand and get the joke.
Did we lose him?
Yeah.
No, it's just a terrible question. That's all.
We're still here. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate that. And yeah, it's like, I felt the same way. Like I was the same way about Python. Like when I was in high school, everybody was electrified by it. And I kind of saw some of it, but I just was into other things. And then in college,
See, that's what it is. We're losing the signal.
See, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you know why? Because
can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we go.
Can you hear me now?
Our fire alarm is going off in our offices here. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Joel. You were breaking up for a moment.
I was just saying that I had the same experience with Python where I kind of, it was okay, but yeah. I didn't like, my friends were way into it. And then in college was when I really had my experience with them. And so I totally get that thinking.
Well, the time, especially when people are in lockdown and are looking for material, if you have sort of flirted with the notion of entering your world, now is as good a time as any. You're saying, how many episodes available up on Netflix right now?
Well, there's 20, but we've done over 217 feature-length episodes. So there's a lot. There's tons of it. It's on Shout Factory TV. They're our partners. There's also, where else are they, Matt? Like, I'm trying to think. Oh, we have a Twitch channel. Mm-hmm.
There's a 24/7 Pluto TV channel.
Yeah.
Love it.
So it's all over the place.
Yeah, Shout Factory is great. They do a whole bunch of Blu-ray collections of loving tributes to horror movies and, John Carpenter stuff. And they include all these behind-the-scenes extras. Yeah, it's a great company. So it's cool you're with those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, this is such, we were really excited to have you guys on.
Oh, thank you guys so much. Well, we're fans.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll be in touch with more stuff.
Excellent. Love it. When things normalize, let's do this again. So we appreciate it, guys. And, Netflix right now, you can watch on all kinds of the other services that they said. So thank you, Joel Hodgson, Matt McGinnis. Mystery Science Theater 3000. Take care, guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Cheers. Stay safe. Bye-bye. We'll see you. Oh, my God.
That's fun.
I love it. And you know what? That kind of turned into a bit of an activity for people, too. Like, you could have people over, watch a bad movie, and it was, you did what they did. You riff along.
That's what I've done that all my life.
Yeah.
I've done that all my life, and people would come over, we'd have parties, and that would be, the movie would go on, and I would start doing it, the live commentary. And it's because I know so many movies that lend themselves to that. I mean, that are just that terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And their uncanny ability to hone in on the ones that are just, you don't do ones that are forced cult movies where they're obviously trying to be bad.
Right.
You do ones that are trying to be good but end up bad.
Right, right.
And that's when it works best.
Nick, for some reason, we have no audio on you. You're trying to speak, but we're getting nothing. Nope. Sorry, man. By the way, Steve, I wanted to mention this. You talk about movies and cult movies and so on. There's a character that is going to enter into a video game franchise. So Mortal Kombat 11 is going to be upgraded to what's called Mortal Kombat 11 Aftermath, and that's coming out on May 26th.
Right.
And there's a new cinematic storyline, new stages, handful of new characters. So characters like Shiva, The Shokan Warrior and Queen and Fungin, Warrior Queen and Fungin, God of Wind. But the biggest news is they will be joined by RoboCop.
Wow.
Yes. Yep, RoboCop. The protector of future Detroit is going to cost $40 for the upgrade.
Yeah.
To get a whole new game or all these characters and scenes and so on. But the coolest thing, Steve, Peter Weller is voicing the character.
That's pretty great. Cool. I love the original Paul Verhoeven RoboCop. I even enjoyed the second one, and he was a part of that. Frank Miller did the second one, wrote the screenplay for it.
But this will be Robo's Cop first appearance in a fighting game.
Excellent.
Do you like the Mortal Kombat stuff? Or I know it's the button masher.
It's a button masher. Yeah. So I kind of enjoy it. Yeah, it's not. There's some other fighting games. Ninja Gaiden was a fighting game that I really liked. I wasn't as into it as I was at that time, like Doom and others. You're running and gunning. That was more my speed.
Steve, do you feel like those games have become more button mashing than they were back? Because when I played Street Fighter II, there was more, I thought, technique involved rather than just smashing buttons together.
Well, in the arcade, you could have different. I think most people have like three or four combos that are their favorite, and they keep using those.
Right.
You know, it's wild because they would include a booklet that would give you 500 different moves, and you'd be like, really?
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to remember that?
And the only way you figured out most of them is like, wait a minute, he just did a back, right. He did a backflip and kicked them in the face.
Right. Yeah.
How the hell did I just do that? And then you got to backtrack and try to figure it out.
Like in Batman, the Arkham games, which I love. I think they're some of my favorite cinematic games, the imagery of Batman and everything. But there's like two or three moves that are my go-tos where the guy's coming at me, I jump over him and get him, you know, in the back of the head.
When the two-player fighters, though, sometimes you go, okay, don't do anything.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to try this out.
Yeah.
And you would have to both agree to not actually hit each other and try your button combinations and see what the hell worked and didn't. And my daughter and I still do that because we'll play Street Fighter 2, and I've forgotten all the combinations. I thought I remembered.
That's the bitch. So when you're playing a game, and there, for example, it's happened once or twice with God of War, the different versions of God of War.
Right.
So, Preston, you're like 60% of the way through it, and you take a break for it for whatever reason, like a month, you have forgotten every move,
totally.
Every way you take on certain bosses.
Yeah.
And it's like, more often than not, I'll just start from the beginning again.
Yeah. That's why, like, when it was Street Fighter on Super Nintendo, there were two buttons. And that's it. So you could only do so much. So there were only a few moves that you could do. And now, because you have two different joysticks on either side, and then, you know, 1,000 buttons, then you can have more combos.
It's tough. I've played a game for like 3 weeks, and finally I asked my son, I'm like, how do you use the pistol? How do you use it? And he finally told me. And so I took a break for like 2 weeks from the game, and I was downstairs, and we have this little intercom system in my house. And I'm playing the game, and I'm like, damn it, I don't remember how to do it. So I hit the button, and I go, Parker, how to use the pistol. And I just, I hear from upstairs, I just hear, double tap triangle. Damn it. That's it. So, but it's impossible to remember all those combinations.
Steve, is God of War a fighter game, or is it
It's God of War has a lot of fighting. To me, it's more along the lines of a Tomb Raider. There's a lot of puzzle solving.
Okay.
There's a lot of fighting. It's a series I adore it, but I will tell you this. Unless you are an adept player, and I played the first couple of games where I was playing a lot, and so I could play it on the harder modes, just play it on the easiest mode. You'll still enjoy it, but it'll still be formidable.
I always felt like if you were playing Mortal Kombat and you didn't do the finishing move, it was like not even worth it. You know, like
I think I told you guys this. I think it was Arkham, the second Arkham Batman game, and Deathstroke. You face off against Deathstroke. And this was, and I'm...
How long?
This, months.
Months?
Months. And I'm like, I cannot be the only one. And I went on the computer and I did a Google search. Pages. F Deathstroke. F people were... And
no
finally
kidding.
I figured out how, by cheating and having to go into GameFAQs, how do you beat this thing?
Yeah.
And you still have to do it. You still have to have the moves.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was one of
those...
But
when you don't even know how, when you don't even know what the
no
point
clue.
Is. Yeah, where's weak point is.
Right, and it was one of those games, Preston, where it was very great when you finally finished it, but you'd go, All right, first phase of the boss battle, second phase of the boss battle. You complete that third phase of the boss battle. If you don't win that, you're back to the beginning again.
Mm-hmm. No fair.
It didn't save your progression in that elaborate boss battle.
I hate that. Can't stand that. And you never know that's going to happen until the first time.
Right. And then you want to die. By the way, I broke that disc and bought it again.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. I did. Yeah. I crushed it through right in front of my wife. Oh, I'm never playing this goddamn game again. And that the next morning, I was at GameStop.
Less than 24 hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so RoboCop is going to be involved in, it's called Mortal Kombat 11 Aftermath, and that's going to be May 26th, and Peter Weller's voicing it.
So I love it.
That's pretty cool.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.